voices out there, like your station and others.
Your voice is what we value. We have to go now. We're out of time, as often happens, the signal is breaking up horribly. Very often, I think Israel does jam the signal coming out of your part of the world. So I have to thank you from my heart. We all do. We all thank you. We're so glad that you're there and that you're reporting. Your voice is incredibly important to us, and we only wish we had more that we could do. This, as well, our guest has been Mazen Khamsia with the International Middle East Media Center. This has been Air Cascadia for Monday, August 11th, 2014. Kate Welch engineered the show today. Thanks for that, Kate. Kathleen Stevenson is the KBOO AM News and Public Affairs Director. I'm Chris Andre. Get the facts. Know your rights. Take a stand. Thanks for listening and stay tuned.
And coming up next, we're going to hear part one of the broadcast on the Trans-Pacific Partnership and how this secretive free trade agreement will impact local efforts to ban GMOs. This KABU program has been made possible in part by KABU Foundation members and a grant from Northwest Connector, connecting riders to the Oregon coast through daily round-trip bus routes from Portland, Salem, and Corvallis. Northwest Connector buses are equipped with bike racks and offer 3-day and 7-day passes with transfers up and down the coast. Schedules and trip planner at nwconnector.net.
This KABU program is made possible in part by KABU Foundation members and a grant from Wilkin & Company, PC, Certified Public Accountants, helping businesses, individuals, and nonprofit organizations make financial decisions based on their personal values since 1987. Wilkin & Company is located at 2435 Southwest 5th Avenue in Portland. Information at 503-225-1359. Or WilkinCPAS.com.
And so this is part one of a two-part forum recorded in Portland on June 19th, 2014, on the Trans-Pacific Partnership and its potential impact on local efforts to ban genetically modified organisms. Featured speakers include Julia DeGraw of Food and Water Watch, Madeline Elder from Communication Workers of America Local 7901, and Elizabeth Swagger from the Oregon Fair Trade Campaign.
So welcome, everyone. Thank you so much for being here tonight. My name's Elizabeth Swagger. I'm with Oregon Fair Trade Campaign, and I'm going to be your MC for the evening. Oregon Fair Trade Campaign is a statewide coalition of labor, environmental, and human rights organizations that work together to stop corporate globalization fostered through free trade agreements. We also work to promote a positive vision of international trade. For the last 20 years, we've seen how free trade agreements like NAFTA, the North American Free Trade Agreement, have exacerbated poverty and displaced workers while multinational corporations profit. NAFTA and NAFTA-style trade policies have been a disaster for workers and the environment and just about everyone but the 1%. We've seen massive job loss, displacement and forced migration, consolidation of our food supplies into corporate giants, wiping out small farmers. We've seen soaring medicine prices, attacks on the environment, undermining the democratic structures that we put in place. If corporate lobbyists get their way, the Trans-Pacific Partnership Free Trade Agreement is going to be a clone of the NAFTA model. It'll empower multinational corporations to run roughshod over environmental and public health protections and rights and empowerment of communities across the globe. The TPP would impact a broad array of issues, but for this forum, we're mostly going to discuss how the TPP would compromise laws that we put in place to protect the environment, things like stopping illegal logging, dangerous extraction practices like fracking of liquefied natural gas, and banning GMO production in our communities, and how the TPP would undermine our current efforts for GMO labeling, requirements that would let us know what is in the food that we feed our families. So I'm going to start off with a little anecdote just to help us frame the discussion tonight. So for years, Monsanto was illegally testing BT cotton in India, cotton that's genetically modified to resist pests. I did a field study in 2005 on ecological garment production in school, and I interviewed farmers in India's cotton belt that had seen a massive wave of farmer suicides. I interviewed a farmer from Maharashtra, a cotton-growing state with the highest level of BT cotton and also the highest level of farmer suicides. The farmer that I interviewed was participating in an organic producers co-op that was supported by Oxfam, and he told me about the debt that many of the farmers that converted to BT cotton faced. He said the salespeople would come to the farms, and they would take these farmers out for a free lunch and then sell them miracle seeds that, you know, they would promise huge yields, and if they purchased the seed and the accompanying chemical fertilizers, they promised that, you know, these farmers would be rich. Not only did the high cost of the GMO seeds, which, by the way, do not reproduce, you have to buy them year after year, and the expensive accompanying agrochemicals put these subsistence farmers in crippling debt, the increased use of agrochemicals led to lower production levels because it caused a decline in soil quality, as well as superbugs that became resistant to the genetically engineered BT crops. But the real cost, the farmer told me, was to public health. The entire community was being poisoned by the runoff of these agrochemicals into the waterways. Currently, 99% of genetically engineered organisms have been created by pesticide companies, mainly Monsanto, with the intent of resisting weed killers, products like Roundup. And of course, the increased use of chemical pesticides and fertilizers has polluted our streams, our aquifers, our drinking water, with serious implications to human health, animals, and the environment. Trade policy played a big role in Monsanto entering India, with the World Trade Organization's World Bank requiring the government of India to deregulate their seed sector, resulting in Monsanto controlling more and more of the world's food and other agricultural production. And of course, this isn't just a problem for countries in the global south. Right here in the U.S., in fact, right here in Oregon, companies like Monsanto are fighting on every front to defeat regulations on food policy, safety, consumer right to know. Consumers deserve to know what is in their produce and their food and how it was produced. If we succeed in getting GMO labeling on the ballot, you can bet that Oregon is going to see a flood of outside dollars to try and defeat it. So now for the connection with the free trade agreement currently being negotiated. One of the reasons that corporations like Monsanto are pushing for the Trans-Pacific Partnership is because it breaks down regulations on food safety standards and consumer labeling by challenging them as international trade barriers. So this is nothing new. In fact, when Quebec banned the use of a very specific chemical pesticide called 2,4-D over concerns of its impact on public health, the U.S.-based chemical giant Dow AgroSciences launched a $2 million challenge claiming that it violated their investor privileges under NAFTA's Chapter 11. The end goal for those big ag companies that are influencing TPP negotiations is standardized rules. but not the best and safest standards, the ones that will commodify food the most by removing barriers to trade, like GMO labeling requirements that we're currently fighting for. The chief U.S. negotiator for the TPP's chapter on agriculture is a former lobbyist for Monsanto. And that's essentially what these trade deals do. It takes power out of the hands of communities and puts it directly in the hands of corporations. Your ability to control what you eat, how it was produced, where it came from, or even know what's in the food that you eat is going to be gone if the TPP moves forward. So we have a really excellent lineup of speakers that are going to share with you tonight. And as always, we want to hear from you, so we'll have plenty of time for questions and answers at the end. I want to introduce our first speaker, who is Madeline Elder. She's the president of Communication Workers of America, Local 7901. She has been for 15 years. As a passionate and dedicated activist working on cross-border labor issues, she realizes how we are all connected in the world and how bosses want to separate us all. Her message is united, we will win. Rhett Lawrence is the conservation director of the Oregon chapter of the Sierra Club. Prior to taking that position in 2013, he was the policy analyst for the Save Our Wild Salmon Coalition and the environmental advocate for Osberg and an environmental and public interest attorney in Georgia. Julia DeGraw is the Northwest organizer for Food and Water Watch. Julia was born and raised in Oregon and enjoys working on issues that she cares about in the state that she loves. She's on the steering committee for Oregon Right to Know and the Right to Know campaign, and is excited about making history in Oregon this year by becoming the first state to pass GMO food labeling through a popular vote. So with that, I want to thank you all for being here and thank our speakers for being here, and hand it over to Madeline.
Good evening. I hope everyone's enjoying their almost summer. And I want to thank everyone for showing up tonight. It's really important. I just came back from a week in Las Vegas with the Communication Workers of America Human Rights Conference. We were very privileged to have the Reverend William Barber, who has been leading the Moral Mondays in North Carolina protests for the past few years. He is an incredible speaker, and he's very, very concerned about the future for our children, especially if things go the way they keep going, not just in terms of jobs and labor, but also in terms of the environment, in terms of what we eat, in terms of whether or not climate change is going to happen. It truly was a multi-issue conference where we touched every single issue that has to do with, you know, are we going to change our world, or are we going to leave it the same? And what we're talking about is building a movement. This is where we start, is right here, you know, in the church with a group of people who are all interested in the same thing. And so I'm really, really pleased that you're here. I appreciate you taking the time out. I'm president of my union local. I'm on the national executive board for my union. Today we had a conference call, and the president of my union went on a huge rant about how the United States is in category 4 in terms of labor laws in the world. Categories 1, 2, and 3 are populated by countries such as England, Germany, and so on. Category 4, which we're in, is populated by countries like Afghanistan, the United States. And category 5 is, of course, Colombia, where they just murder labor leaders, and Afghanistan, where there's no rule of law whatsoever. So it's a very sobering thought. So what we're doing here is we're fighting for our lives, not just our lives, but the lives of our children and the future, whether or not the corporations are going to run our economy and run us to the ground, or whether or not we're going to stand up and have a people-powered economy and a people-powered society. So first off, I I want to talk, Elizabeth, who was on the bargaining committee for Free Geek, which we organized, asked me to talk broadly about the Trans-Pacific Partnership and about Trade Promotion Authority. So, and I've done this a lot. So basically, has everybody here heard of NAFTA? Do I have to go into that? Okay, great. Fabulous. Okay, so, I mean, like most of us, we do believe in trade. You know, trade is what happens when you go to the store. Trade is what happens when you have a surplus of whatever you're doing and you want to sell it for some, so that you can trade it for something else. Trade is trade. And it can be good or and fair, or it can be have an unlevel playing field. We as Oregonians really want a trade policy that creates a level playing field for the Oregon producers. It creates jobs, it would protect the environment and promote public health. That's what we want. Unfortunately, the legacy of the recent corporate trade agreements, I don't call them free trade, I call them corporate trade agreements, has been the exact opposite. I'm also gonna talk a little bit about Trade Promotion Authority, but basically one of the things about these corporate trade agreements is that it makes the corporate, it allows the corporations to push it so that there's a race to the bottom in terms of not just labor wages, but also environmental concerns, safety, public policy. It's a race to the bottom. Where's the worst country, where it's the cheapest, and where you don't have to do anything to take care of the environment? That's where they want to locate their factories, and they want to be able to move their capital to that too, so that they can avoid paying taxes. Okay? Oftentimes, at the same time, Congress, congressional reps, Representative Blumenauer, tells us that these corporate trade agreements are going to float all boats. All boats will rise with these things. And yet, here we are, more than 10 years after NAFTA, and we know for, 20 years after NAFTA, and we know for a fact that the boats have all lowered, that we've lost a net of 58,000 jobs because of corporate trade here in Oregon alone, millions across the country. We know that the trade deficit here in the United States and in Oregon specifically is growing, and has not decreased since the start of these corporate trade agreements. It was interesting, one of my members had written to Representative Blumenauer about the Trans-Pacific Partnership, and he wrote her back this letter of how many thousands, hundreds of thousands of jobs here in Oregon are connected with trade, which begged the question, of whether or not these corporate trade agreements actually increased jobs. And of course they didn't, and he's never gonna say that. Under our last three corporate trade agreements, Korea, Colombia, which was a travesty, and Panama, which took effect in 2012, the combined U.S. exports to these three countries actually fell by 4% in 2012 relative to the same months in 2011. In other words, again, we're experiencing more of a trade deficit. No, it's really not about creating jobs in the United States, and it never has been. And I just wanted to say that the U.S. Labor Department did certify over 2.5 million American jobs were lost to either direct offshoring or displacement by imports. And I do want to say, here in Oregon, there was we were trying to organize a telecom T-Mobile call center in Redmond. It was 300 people. They had on-site childcare. And when the Department of Justice denied AT&T the ability to merge with T-Mobile, T-Mobile turned around and shut down 7 call centers in the United States and sent their work to the Philippines. And one of those call centers was in Redmond. And the Trade Act actually gives people who lose their jobs money to go to school. You know, under regular unemployment, you don't get to go to school. But under the Trade Act, you do. And still collect unemployment and collect it longer than the 6 months. You get to collect it for up to 2 years. T-Mobile fought CWA on allowing those ex-employees of theirs to get this trade act adjustment pay, which they didn't spend a dime for. It wasn't any money coming out of their pocket. And yet they were so, the corporations are so against anything that would ameliorate these corporate trade agreements, that's what they did. Basic background on the Trans-Pacific Partnership, it's negotiated between the United States, Vietnam, which has the lowest minimum wage almost entirely in the world, Singapore, Malaysia, Brunei, which stones women and gay people, Australia, New Zealand, Chile, and we all know about Chile, Peru, Mexico, Canada, and possibly Japan, and that's going back and forth. Just among those 12 countries, it's already bigger than NAFTA ever was, and would set the rules of trade for 40% of the global economy, 40%. The Trans-Pacific Partnership is more important or more significant because it also creates a docking agreement so that, for example, the Philippines can join later and other countries can join later. It's theoretically open to any country in the Pacific Rim, and you know, China is one of them. Transparency. The negotiations have been pretty much secret. There's 600 people participating in the trade agreements from the United States, most of whom are from corporations. There's a few labor representatives, there's a few representatives in terms of the environment, but they don't get to see what each other does, and most important, Congress does not get to see everything that's going on. They're not going to see anything until it's time to take the vote. People throughout the country and the world whose lives are affected by this pact don't get to review it. Not even Congress gets to review it until a few hours before they vote on it, if the Trade Promotion Act passes. This sort of backroom dealing is completely outrageous. And even, you know, Senator Ron Wyden, who has never met a free trade agreement that he hasn't fallen in love with, is a little bit disturbed by that. There's one of the things that it's far more secretive than the trade agreements that were negotiated under the Bush administration. And this is really, really scary. What we do know is culled from conversations with people who are involved, mostly the activists, and from a few chapters of the text that have been secretly leaked to the public. What we know about the U.S. proposal for the labor standards in the Trans-Pacific Partnership is that they're essentially the same as what we got under George W. Bush, which is crap. Oh, excuse me. It's better than NAFTA because they're written in the document, but I mean, honestly, I mean, how good can it be when we're a Category 4 labor country? I mean, honestly, it's good news for companies like Nike, though, where they can pay, you know, 75 cents an hour to the workers in Vietnam to make shoes that they turn around and sell back to us at $120 a pair, and they're going to be able to do it without paying tariffs now. They pay tariffs of, what, between 10 and 20 bucks a pair, right? It will depress wages throughout the world, as we know, it has already done, and you can't produce the majority of the world's stuff under vicious, ever-declining sweatshop conditions and not expect it to hurt the middle class. And we're experiencing that right now here in the United States. So those are the economic impacts. There's other parts that are not about trade at all. They're about tariffs, they're about intellectual property, and so on. But the big two are that we're talking about today are big ag, like corporations like ADM and Cargill and Monsanto want to use the Trans-Pacific Partnership to handcuff what is possible in moving towards sustainable food production. They want to control, and they already do control, a huge percentage of the world's food supplies, and they want to control more. They want the TPP to make it easier for them to buy low and sell high. They get to import more fruits and vegetables grown on big plantations with exploited labor, and which in turn would undercut Oregon farmers. What what Congressman Schrader kept telling me was that, well, this is going to be great for the wheat farmers in Oregon. The wheat farmers are going to be able to sell overseas and sell their crop. And yet, what's really going to happen is they're going to have to compete with people that don't use threshers, that don't have to pay off a debt, that don't have to pay off mortgages, and so on. I've got 3 minutes, so I'm going to talk a little bit about the investment chapter. That's basically the investment dispute process used to be between nation and nation under the World Trade Organization. It's between nation and nation, but under this thing, it would be a corporation can sue a nation, a sovereign nation. Now, how is that possible, and why is that possible? What it would do is put a chilling effect and actually make illegal laws that we pass to protect ourselves from GMOs and so on. And so I think that's really the huge thing. The Trade Promotion Authority is what's called Fast Track, and basically the last time we had Fast Track, they showed Congress the corporate trade agreement. Congress had a couple of hours to look at it, and then they vote. And this Trans-Pacific Partnership has at least 29 chapters that we know about. It would affect a whole lot of people, and it's really important that we start calling up and calling our congressional reps, and also telling our friends and neighbors that that Fast Track and this corporate trade agreement are not good for this country, that we need to know, that Congress needs to know what they're voting on, and more importantly, we need to know what Congress is voting on. And so that's really crazy. When we talked to Senator Wyden's person a month before last in D.C., he said that they're going to have something called not Fast Track, but Smart Track. It gives them 24 more hours to look at the bill. So, you know, that's what they do. And I tell you what, I went to the Cedar Hills Kiwanis Club and talked about the Trans-Pacific Partnership. And you know what? They wanted to hear about it, and they had very intelligent questions. And I'm telling you, this is where we need to go. We don't need to talk to each other. We need to go out to people who don't ever see us. And if I can do it and look less crazy than I normally do, then you can do that. So I really want to thank you very much for coming tonight.
So my name is Rhett Lawrence. I'm the conservation director for the Oregon chapter of the Sierra Club. Sierra Club is the nation's oldest and largest environmental organization. And so I'm here tonight to talk about a few of the environmental threats that are be posed by the TPP. We'll stipulate up front, I'm not an expert on the TPP. Luckily, I'm surrounded by many of them in this room, and probably many of you as well. And we do have several TPP experts working on our staff in Washington, D.C., so I get to import some information from them. But, you know, even if I were an expert on the issue, as Madeline has noted, much of this treaty is being negotiated behind closed doors. We don't really know much of the context that that these discussions are, you know, happening in. So, you know, there's very little I would be able to share with you in terms of the environmental impacts. But for the fact that one of the chapters of the TPP that has been leaked is the environmental chapter. And so I'll return to that in a minute. But, you know, so obviously the supposed intent of the environmental chapter of the TPP is to deal with some of the environmental and conservation threats around the Pacific Rim, and there are many. For instance, you know, we know there's a epidemic of illegal logging all around the Pacific Rim. And, you know, illegal logging is costing United States mills and timber companies something like $1 billion a year right now. And, you know, when you have illegal logging going on in other countries around the Pacific Rim, in addition to the deforestation and climate impacts that has, you know, it puts U.S. companies that want to do sustainable forestry at an even worse disadvantage economically. and makes it harder for them to sell their products overseas, because why would they when other countries are doing it, pennies on the dollar. We also know there are tons of illegal and indiscriminate fishing practices that are happening, even more reprehensible practices like shark finning that are being conducted by others around the Pacific Rim and costing U.S. fishermen something like $15 billion per year. So the work that Oregon and the United States in general have done to establish sustainable fisheries, marine reserves, all that sort of thing, is just being completely undermined by practices that are happening all around the Pacific Rim right now. And another way the TPP could dramatically affect the environment here is by mandating automatic export approval for liquefied natural gas, or LNG. The TPP would prevent the United States Department of Energy from considering the public interest in proposals to export LNG to other countries. And as many of you know, we've got two big LNG export terminals and pipeline proposals on the table in Oregon. And in addition to the fact that both of these terminals are proposed to be built on geologically unstable sand spits that essentially will liquefy if there's a large earthquake, or, when there's a large earthquake, I should say, or a tsunami. There are also tons of issues related to the impacts of the hundreds of miles of pipelines and the clear cuts that would be required to get those pipelines, all the stream crossings to get those pipelines to the export terminals in Coos Bay and Warrington. And then, of course, any increase in LNG exports that's made easier by these export terminals is just going to increase the amount of dirty and dangerous fracking going on around the country. So, to think that the TPP could just essentially rubber stamp every LNG export terminal in the country is extremely disturbing. So, obviously the environmental chapter of the TPP could theoretically put in place some rules to address some of these environmental and conservation impacts, but the chapter that we have seen when it was leaked has shown that it's entirely toothless and basically meaningless as it currently stands. There are no enforcement provisions. There's some language about maintaining basic levels of environmental impacts, but there really are no rules in place to enforce against people who break the agreements. So there just are no consequences to it. So many more environmental concerns than I can list out tonight. But all of it shows that we've got a long way to go in terms of making the TPP address the environmental impacts of the issues around the Pacific Rim. And I think fairly little chance of making it better because that's obviously just not a concern of the people who are negotiating the treaty. So finally, since we're here tonight to talk about GMOs, I did want to, and I'm going to let Julia talk more about the GMO issue in just a moment. I did want to note that the Oregon Chapter of the Sierra Club has just voted to endorse the ballot measure to label GMO products in this state. So certainly would encourage all of you to sign the petition if you haven't yet, to throw some money to the campaign, go out and knock on some doors, obviously vote for it in November, and let's get this thing to happen. So thank you very much.
Thank you so much. That was a great transition. As was mentioned, I'm Julia DeGraw. I'm the Northwest organizer with Food and Water Watch. Food and Water Watch we're a national group. We actually technically have international presence as well in Europe and Central America. But we really focus on fighting the corporate control of our food and water systems. And we really want to make sure that here in America, really a good example is working to improve the farm bill so that it works for farmers and consumers, not for big agribusinesses like Monsanto and Cargill and ADM. So we're in it for the long game. We have a long-term vision about how to change our food and water systems so that they work for people again. And you can kind of imagine how that kind of work might be hindered by something as egregious as the Trans-Pacific Partnership. So I think that's just something to really keep in mind. I mean, all the work that we do and every victory we have is something that we could essentially lose if the TPP were allowed to pass. We do a lot of work to stop fracking, and communities in Colorado have succeeded. Five communities have succeeded in banning fracking. Those were hard-won battles. Their own governor sued one of their communities over banning fracking. That's the kind of local decision-making and local control that may not be allowed to fly if the TPP were to pass. And something that I think is really relevant, too, which is far less painful and soul-killing than a lot of the stuff we've been hearing tonight, is that Fast Track came up earlier this year. And if you think the TPP sounds bad, the Fast Track sounds even worse. I mean, it basically takes something like the TPP and forces Congress to vote on it with almost no time to review it, and with no chance to make amendments or any actual substantial changes. It just forces it through. And that's crazy. And that's basically Congress abdicating their decision-making power to pass a trade deal that is extremely detrimental to the environment, is a race to the bottom for environmental policies and human health and safety. So Fast Track is bad. It's really bad. It's so bad that when people like you and me and people across the country and people from all over the state of Oregon especially get in touch with their congressional members saying, I really need you to not support Fast Track. You cannot publicly support Fast Track because it's so undemocratic and it's so damaging to everything that's American, right? And it's really hard once they've been called out on it for a congressional member to say, okay, I'm going to continue to support Fast Track, right? And so we actually did succeed in stopping Fast Track in that first round in January, I believe it was. So we have power here. It's so bad that we can win, really. And that's how we plan to win on TPP, is to kill the new version of Fast Track, which is Smart Track. We'll just put a new name on it. And unless Smart Track allows for actual amendment processes, a public review where we can actually see everything that's in there and actually have a chance at a fair trade policy, then Smart Track is just Fast Track, and we need to oppose it. And since we've won on Fast Track in the past, we know we can win again. So I just want people to be really aware that while, yes, we have to win on the TPP in order to win on everything else we care about, we can do it. It's something we can do. And I think it's also really important to keep in mind that we do have to keep this fight on multiple fronts, because the Oregon Right to Know campaign, this campaign to label genetically engineered foods in the state of Oregon, is part of that big, broad movement of how to take back our food system, right, and have it work for people and consumers again. And Oregon needs to be the place where that shift occurs. We need national policy on this, of course. But that's not going to happen anytime soon in science. It takes really strong state leadership and victory state by state by state before we can start getting a change at the federal level. This has been done on a lot of different issues, and it's going to be the same with genetically engineered food labeling. So we need to keep our eye on both prizes. We have to work on both these issues. So when Fast Track rears its ugly head, Smart Track rears its ugly head, we're gonna fight that. But in the meantime, and now through November, we've got to put our energy into making sure we win on the GMO food labeling initiative, because that is one of those huge victories for people and for democracy and for transparency in our food system, so that we can have an actual supply demand economy where we can make a choice about what we're choosing, so that we can be provided with what we want. I mean, this basic stuff. So I think before I jump into the GML campaign more than I already have, I do want to just really quickly define what a GMO is. I think there's often a little bit of confusion about what a genetically engineered organism actually is, and then talk a little bit about what's different with the campaign and how we can win and how you can get involved. So a genetically modified organism, or a GMO, is a plant or an animal that's actually had the DNA from another plant or animal injected into its DNA. It is something that literally could not exist or happen naturally. It requires human, human invention to do it. And that's why these organisms are then able to be patented. I mean, by definition, under patent law, it has to be something that couldn't exist in nature. And this is really interesting because it's different enough to patent, but it's supposedly not different enough to label. And we have a food system and regulatory system that basically has decided to define these genetically engineered organisms as substantially equivalent, which means they're similar enough to their conventional counterparts that we don't need to do further research or testing. We'll just or labeling. And this is very concerning because the FDA and the USDA also don't do independent testing on these organisms. They really take the industry's word for it. When Monsanto says we tested it and we think it's good, our regulatory agencies say, okay, so this campaign, the Oregon Right to Know and labeling campaign, isn't really about saying that GMOs are good or bad. It's really about being able to make a choice, given that there's not adequate regulation. We should be able to definitely make a decision about whether or not we're eating these things. And it's also something that our corporations, our food companies in America, already do for 64 other countries. They're labeling in 64 other countries. They know how to do this. It's not hard. Americans are just really frankly seeking out a right that millions of people have all over the world. And something that I think it is another really strong link to the Trans-Pacific Partnership that Warren's mentioning right now is there's a section of it that I always forget the name because it makes no sense that says
sanitary and phytosanitary.
Yes, sanitary and phytosanitary. Where do they come up with these things? But under that section, it requires that if you're going to regulate something like genetically, or if you're going to label genetically engineered foods, if you're going to regulate something, you have to be able to prove harm. You're not allowed to use the cautionary principle, which is kind of what, labeling is allowing people to be cautious if they choose to be, right? They're basically saying you have to prove harm. And that's really interesting under a circumstance in which, with patent law, scientists aren't allowed to do tests on these organisms without permission from the corporation. So all the science on GMOs is funded by the corporations that make the GMOs. So it makes, the TPP really works in favor of these corporations. And I think just makes a very strong argument for why we need the right to know so we can have transparency in our food system and people can make educated decisions about what they're eating and what they're feeding their families. So I think people are probably somewhat familiar with what happened in California and Washington. We had two really recent GMO initiative campaigns in our neighboring states that were very narrow losses. I think we always just like to talk about them as losses. They were narrow losses. We came very close in both those states to winning. And it's another reason why we really need a win in Oregon, because with Vermont passing GMO labeling through their legislature, we can still be the first state to pass GMO food labeling and continue that momentum by passing it at the ballot box, becoming the first state to pass it through popular vote. And I can honestly say that after two other campaigns, a lot of the same folks who've been involved in all of that are learning from those campaigns. But I really have to say that Oregon is different. I think we all know that we're different. We live in Oregon. I think a lot of us choose to be here because Oregon feels different. We have a pretty strong independent streak. But we also, it's the timing is really good. We have like a big election. It's a gubernatorial election. We have some really great things that are going to be on the ballot that's going to turn out the vote. And something that's, all, and we also have the first two campaigns in our neighboring states that's just raised the awareness of the issue. And I think a bunch of you are aware that two counties passed GMO bans recently. So that just really raised, right?
And you've been listening to a community forum recorded in Portland on June 19th, 2014, on the Trans-Pacific Partnership and its potential impact on local efforts to ban genetically modified organisms. Featured speakers were Julia DeGraw of Food and Water Watch, Madeline Elder from Communication Workers of America, Local 7901, and Elizabeth Swagger with the Oregon Fair Trade Campaign. The second half of this forum will be aired next Monday, August 18th at 10:15 a.m. It is just a few seconds before 11 a.m., and you do have it tuned to KBOO in Portland. Coming right up next, it's Health Watch with Dr. David Naiman, featuring the author of Go Wild, a book that argues that although civilization has rapidly evolved, our bodies have not kept pace. And at 11:30, Dan Johnson will interview Rich Silverman and someone else about senior housing in Portland. And once again, I'd like to thank KBOO members for your generous support. If you're not a current member, you can become one. Go to kboo.fm and click on Donate Today. This KBOO program has been made possible in part by KBOO Foundation members and a grant from Grendel's, a neighborhood coffee house offering organic coffee, sandwiches for breakfast and lunch, and Wi-Fi. Proud to support KBOO, Grendel's is open every day at East Burnside and 8th. Information at 503-595-9550 or Facebook.com/ Grendel's Coffee House.
The purpose of this program is not to prescribe a treatment to individuals. Listeners should consult their healthcare practitioner before attempting any treatment.
Good morning and welcome to Health Watch. I'm Dr. David Naiman, your host. Today's guest, Richard Manning, is an award-winning journalist